You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Well, I learned to, it is really an illusion because, you know, like when we did Nothing Face and we had the Astronomy Domine on a lot of airplay, did a tour with Faith No More in Soundgarden, then a tour with Rush, and I thought, yeah, we made it. And then Angerat came out, it didn't sell at all. And then we had to start over again, but it's really what I learned. You release an album, it doesn't sell, you write a new one, we try to make it better, and we went back to the indie style with Eric Forrest as a trio, and then with Jason Newsted jumping in the band in the early 2000s, the spotlight was on us again because he was also playing with Ozzy, and we were opening for Ozzy. So it's another period where I thought we made it, you know. But then, unfortunately, Piggy passed away, and then took a break. It really took Heavy Montreal in 2008 before, yeah, because for like 3 years, Jason, Snake, and I were on a mission to finish Infini and 14, the two albums we had started before Piggy's departure.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsheads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians, talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. Hope you had a killer week. I most certainly did. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal is Montreal's premier metal promoter. If you are ever in Montreal and you are looking for a great metal show to go to, well, trust me, Heavy Montreal will have you covered. They put on a bunch of killer shows all year long. They are simply the best. Goddamn stoked to have them behind the podcast. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I would love for you to tell a friend about the podcast. If there's someone in your life that just loves extreme music, that just loves craft beer, well, you should absolutely let them know that the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast exists. If you would encourage one of your craft beer loving metalhead friends to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, today's episode is a very special one. It was recorded at the 5-year anniversary party at Mutaid back on October 21st here in Montreal. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 433 with Michel Aoué Langevin of Voivod.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
So what's up, everyone? Thank you so much for being here. Long time coming. I've been planning this night, thinking about this. For those of you who don't know who I am, I'm Matt Migaki. I am the vocalist of Cryptopsy, the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. 5 years ago, I started a podcast just to keep me busy, because all my band members in Cryptopsy were really busy, and I knew that I would be getting jealous of all of their amazing projects that they had going on. So I started a podcast, and here I am, 5 years later, celebrating the 5 years with people that I met on the internet from across the globe. There's people from Mexico City. There's people from Texas. We got people from New Jersey, Ontario that flew here, drove here to be a part of it. People from Montreal as well. Of course, I appreciate you all. I am with an iconic guest tonight. I am with Michel Langevin, also known as Aoué from Voivod. I've always wanted to have you on the podcast. So when I was setting up the 5-year anniversary party, we are at Mutaid, by the way, recording this live with a live audience. Make some noise. I totally always wanted to have you guys because there would be no Quebec metal. There'd be no metal, hypothetically, without your contribution to the scene. With all of that grand introduction, Michel, how are you doing?
I'm great, actually. Back home after a long, long 40th anniversary tour.
Hell yeah.
So I'm pretty relaxed right now, but it doesn't mean that we're not working on something. We're writing a new album right now.
Fuck yes.
And the last show for the 40th anniversary tour is December 16th at Place Belle with Meshuggah.
Just a little nice show to wrap it up at Place Bill. I like that.
Yes, yes.
No better way to end it. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives, music while sharing killer craft beers. Before us right now, for the people at home that didn't make it out and cannot see what we got here, there are five beers in front of us, tasters, and they are all part of the Metal Injection Presents Vox and Hops Pit Culture Project, which I've been doing throughout the whole year. It's about to wrap up. I've released 28 beers across the globe this year as a part of this project. Every beer depicts and describes a different move that happens in a mosh pit. What really happens in a mosh pit? I feel like a lot of people think that mosh pits are violent and dangerous, but you know, and I know, that it's actually a place full of love, really.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I was there in the mid-80s, and and I was in the middle of a mosh pit once, and it can be pretty hectic. But yeah, it's pretty peaceful in a way. It's true. It's like order in chaos, and
which is exactly the name of one of the beers drink. However, we are going to start with a different beer. We're going to kick it off with Kanawaki Brewing's and Mutoid's Fighting Giants. This is an India Pale Kolsch. It comes in at 5.8%. Give me a cheers. And let's take a sip. Hell yeah. It's crisp, yet it's hoppy. It's smooth. I fucking love it. It's goddamn tasty.
I don't know about beer, but I just know it's really good.
It's really good. I appreciate your honesty. Continuing with the honesty train here, take me back to your very first beer. Remember the very first beer that you drank?
Yeah, it was not a beer, actually. I thought it was a beer, and I had my fake ID and everything, and I bought it. I think it was called Porter, but it's something you have to mix with a beer. Yeah, and it's just like, I don't know what it is, it's just really thick, and it didn't taste good at all, and I learned years later that you're not supposed to drink it like that. You're just supposed to mix it with a beer.
Interesting. Yeah. See, I am not aware of this, and I'm going to have to do more research about this.
It was the 70s. It was called Porter.
God damn. They wanted to make you work. Maybe it was a way to make beers into stouts, but back then, by just adding something thick and dark.
It was recommended by a friend of me, and it was a prank.
You know, not a good friend.
It's not my friend anymore.
Well, I don't think so. Before we sat down here, and you mentioned just a moment ago that you're not the biggest craft beer enthusiast.
Chewy in the band. Chewy the guitar player.
Because he works a bit with Hoff and Stark too, and he totally made a Voivod beer, which was super interesting.
Yeah, we had a couple, and also we had one at Decibel Metal Fest.
You did. Yeah,
Memory Failure. It was called. Yeah,
I do enjoy the most recent one that he made, Lost Machine.
Yes,
that friend put together for you guys, where it's called a Stein beer, and a Stein beer, for people that don't know, they heat up these rocks on a fire, and then they pick up these rocks, and then they put it into the wort as it's boiling, and they let this rock do some iodizing effects. And all the beer nerds here are going to tell me I'm wrong with my description, but that's the closest thing that I understand about what happened to this beer.
Yeah, it's true. It's actually based on the concept of the song Lost Machine, where a kid has a rock and it can throw it into a machine to stop a satellite. It's a sci-fi story.
The concept goes full circle into the music, into the beer.
Yes. Yeah.
I fucking love that. Talk to me about the soundtrack of your youth. This is a classic Vox and Hops question. I ask every guest this question. There's a reason why I ask it. I'd love to hear about the music that was playing in your house before you were in control of the radio. What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
My father was into the Rolling Stone, which is pretty cool. I was arguing a lot with him because I was into the Beatles, but he had like... And my mother was more into the Joe Dassin, Dalida, which I still like when I hear it, and ABBA. But she had the most amazing vinyl that I still have, and it's Vangelis, L'Apocalypse des Animaux, and it's really, really cool soundtrack for an environmental movie. from the 70s, and I still have her vinyl.
That's super sick. Yeah.
That's the one I like the most. I actually ended up playing it myself.
Later on?
Yeah.
I love that. That's full circle and honoring where you came from to the truest form.
And I had my father's single, Honky Tonk Woman,
yeah,
an original.
Yeah.
I would be very rich now if I still have it.
Sometimes we don't know. You never know. What was it about the Beatles that entranced you so much? What was it about them versus the Stones that encaptured you so much?
I saw a couple of movies, Help and Hard Day's Night, and there was some Beatles footage where I could see Ringo banging really hard on the drums, and the drums was moving, and a lot of energy. So, but it's a coincidence that I was walking in the street when I was really young, and there's a new kid in the street playing a guitar on the sidewalk, and he was playing Beatles songs, and but he was singing in fake English, you know, yes. But he knew all the chords, and but he was like my age, like 9 or something.
Wow.
And I asked him, like, where did you learn that? And he explained to me that he was in a band with his brothers and his father, and they were called the Teddy Boys, and it was like a Partridge Family thing.
That's so cool.
So I went to his home, and there was a lot of gear everywhere, and I immediately went for the drum. The cymbals looked like flying saucers. I loved it, you know. But the problem was his older brother had hidden the drumsticks.
Because he's smart. Yeah.
So we found his pool cues, yeah, and we chopped them up.
Where there is a will, there is a way, people.
He was furious.
I can imagine.
Yeah, so that was my first experience, you know, playing on a real drum kit with pool cues on Beatles songs. Yeah. So I still my favorite band. But soon I switched to a couple of years after, I asked for Kiss Alive 1 when it came out for Christmas, and I got it. And everybody was like, put it on. So I put it on, and they're like, take it off. my new favorite band.
Because it's just too much.
And it just went, you know, my sister's new boyfriend showed up with 8-track tapes in his muscle car of Led Zeppelin 2, Uriah Heep, Demons and Wizards.
Yeah.
The other one was Deep Purple in Rock. And that's where I learned. I had a lot to learn drum-wise, you know, and so it went like that, you know.
The steps, that's all we got to do as musicians, for sure. Take me back to that first Beatles jam. Some people just got it. Some people just have the rhythm. Some people just know how to play an instrument.
Yeah.
There's like an innate thing that just some people are born with. Was that you? That first jam, did you understand the instrument enough to perform some songs with this prolific 9-year-old guitarist?
Well, first, I was playing a lot on my pillows.
Okay, before the drum set.
Yeah, and that was I was trying to figure out the beats, and I destroyed all the pillows and everything. and the Beatles songs, I got them the first time around, but the Honky Tonk Woman song from the Rolling Stones, I was just going ta 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 ta, like I had no idea. And then I was trying some Elvis songs, and that's even harder because it's the Motorhead beat, you know. But all of this came really handy later when came for me to learn like AC/DC. I knew the Beatles beat, Motorhead, I knew the Elvis beat, and so on. It's just an extension.
You're just like putting tools into your toolbox that you can pull out and then expand upon.
Yeah, and also up north in the high school, I was reading a lot eventually while listening to prog rock and hard rock and all that. I was hearing a lot about the new punk movement in Rock and Folk magazine. And I couldn't wait until I could get a hold of the Pistols, Stranglers, the Damned. And when I finally got these vinyls, I moved in more into a tribal style. You know, a lot of toms happening.
The toms were unlocked.
Yeah. But the real spark for me was when I walked into a store and I saw the first Iron Maiden album. And then I immediately grabbed it before anyone could. And it was already my favorite band, just watching the cover, you know. And when I put it on at home, it was exactly the type of music I wanted to hear.
And, music that you didn't know existed.
No, and it was like punk, metal, goth, prog, one package, you know. And that's really where I decided that I was going to try to be a heavy metal drummer, yeah.
I think that's fucking awesome. We're switching up beers. We're moving to Lepotskaya's Ordering Chaos, as you mentioned before. This one is a hoppy lager, 4.8%. Cheers. Cheers. Now, this is a crusher. This is smooth as hell. The hops are subtle. A nice little bitter bite of the lager aspect of it. Fucking love that.
It's not too strong, so that's the type of beer I like to have on stage.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yes.
So I always like a light blonde or something. And once in Belgium,
I know where this is going.
It ends with snake breaking two ribs.
Oh shit!
But they had like 18%. Beers or
yes,
something.
Yes, they do.
And while on stage, halfway through the show, I was like, what's going on here?
Oh, it's a 9%. Oh, it's a 9% triple, yes. Typically in Belgium, whenever we go there, they give us these cases of La Chimay. And I don't know if it's for your experience with Voivod, but with Cryptopsy, very typically, we tend to go to London after Belgium, and you got to go across the border to take the ferry. And Flo, every day when we go, but tomorrow we're crossing the border. You guys need to behave yourselves so that we have a nice border crossing, and then historically, we don't listen.
But. Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, Snake is not here, so I can talk about him. A couple of times, I was like, hey, tomorrow it's LA. Everyone is there.
Exactly.
And then in the afternoon, he's on his back and backstage. Oh.
Coffee and a nap. Stat. Take me to your first shows. Do you remember the very first music that you went to go watch?
It was... it was in the 70s. I went to see Jethro Tull with the band UK at the Quebec Coliseum.
Yeah.
And it was really amazing because Terry Bozzio was on drums with UK.
Wow.
And, it's the first time I saw a prog rock drummer rocking. You know,
Yeah.
And it was a great experience, except that I hitchhiked to the show. And I was a teenager. And after the show, I realized I had no lift to go back across the park home, you know?
Yeah.
It was a long way home. So I saw a bus from the Cégep de Jonquière, school bus. And I jumped on it, and I sat down. And suddenly, there's one place missing in the bus. So I'm like... And somebody is like, there's a spy in the bus. It was me. I was lucky because the driver let me sit on the front
cool.
in the stairway, which was totally illegal, you know?
Yes, of course.
So I went back across the park to my parents' place safely.
Oh, yeah. Cheers to that bus driver for breaking the law and letting you get home after a cool musical experience.
Amazing show.
That's so cool. Do you remember your first time on stage?
First time on stage.
There's probably no stage. It typically is that.
I have my well, it's again, it's my first experience on stage. I was starting on drums, and I was about 14 or some guy showed up at my parents' place. He's like, oh, my drummer is drunk on the sofa. We have a wedding. Can you do it?
No way.
And, yeah. And he's like, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, we don't play that stuff. We play Beatles, Elvis. All right. Oh, good.
I'm totally good
and
in
then,
the pocket.
So we go way off in the woods in the Peribonka. And then the first, no rehearsal, nothing. And so the guy turns around, he's like, cha-cha. And then I have no idea how to play cha-cha. So I'm playing like, tan-tan-tan-tan-tan-tan-tan-tan. And then after that, he turns around, he's like, rumba. Samba.
So it's all
it was very strange.
Wow. Yeah.
And then finally, they play one Elvis medley, and I was so happy.
You crushed
and
it.
And the first drum roll, at this point, the singer guy was really drunk. And the first drum roll is stopped. He turns around, he's like, whoa, whoa, Le Jeune, whoa. And, all right. So yeah,
too much. Over the top.
A wedding in Peribonka around 77, 78-ish.
Yeah. It's amazing.
But after that, you have to go to the Voivod
era.
The first shows in 83.
So yeah. Sick. I was conceived and born in 83, so we had a good year in 83. I fucking love that. Something that I love about you that is just so iconic and interesting is that you're more than a drummer, you're also a prolific artist. Talk to me about that. Take me back to discovering art and learning that you can draw and doodling. How early did that begin?
Yeah, it was very young. I don't know if you remember the cartoon character called Atom Ant.
It sounds very familiar.
Very,
yeah.
Very old. Atomic Ant.
Okay.
And it was my first hero.
Awesome.
So I went to my cousin's place with my parents for Christmas, and my cousin, he had drawn Atom Ant, and I put it on the wall, and I asked him, can you give it to me? He said, no, but I can show you how to draw. And I never stopped after. And eventually, like, the cover of Negatron is an homage to that Atom Ant character.
That's so cool. Yeah. What was it about drawing that just captivated you? What was it about, like, seeing something on that wall and then you wanting it and then being able to do it yourself? What was that, the need there?
When I realized that I could do it, I was really, really happy. And so I just, you know, everything I saw on TV, Ultraman, or, you know, I like to draw what I saw on TV, and I never stopped, but it's in the mid-70s I discovered the magazine Metal Hurlant, became heavy metal magazine. It's where I decided I wanted to be a comic book artist, and it's also where I created the Voivod concept. But first, it was based on Lord of the Rings and Dracula, the book Dracula, and then but slowly with the Cold War and anarchist punk bands, it turned into a post-apocalyptic concept, and there were also a couple of movies, I think one is called If You Love This Planet. It's a great documentary, National Film Board, about nuclear stockpiles. And so this was very influential. There was a made-for-TV movie called The Day After, after a nuclear bomb. And by the time Snake joined the band in January 83, the concept was pretty much a post-nuclear vampire. Yeah, it's sort of oriented, you know.
How similar, and are there any similarities, between being an artist, that a visual artist, and an artist that builds drum beats and builds everything out? Those, is that like two separate identities within yourself, or is there a crossover there?
For me, it's really hard to tell, because I always my drawings were influenced by Voivod music and vice versa. Everything was intertwined, the lyrics, the music, the art, so it's all really connected. The process is probably the same in terms of if I have to find a drum beat, I will usually go, like, my technique is, okay, my first idea would be to play that, I'll play the opposite.
Interesting.
And when I do the drawing, I always think, okay, the first thing in mind would, you know, it would be to draw something there, but I'll do something totally, totally different. So I try to explore a lot.
Like pushing your own first intuition. Your first intuition is something that you take and say, how can I make this better, even before you put your pen on paper, drums on the skins?
Less cliche, less obvious, more weirder.
Yeah, which is why you have such an identity, both visually and as a drum player.
I tried to find my signature right
away.
Exactly.
But takes time. Yeah.
There are a couple of artists I really copied. Mainly the heavy metal magazine artists like Philippe Drouillet, Bilal, Moebius. These are the people that I learned from. And then I saw the movie Alien, and then my art changed. And also Eraserhead by David Lynch, The Wall by Pink Floyd. You know, so every time I would see a movie like that, an artsy movie, my art kind of changed. But it also changed with the music because I always drew while listening to music. So when I discovered,
that's super sick, yeah.
So when I discovered industrial music in the 80s, my art changed as well, and so on and so on. But for a while in the 70s, I was copying the prog rock covers like Yes and Krautrock rock like Klaus Schulze or Tangerine Dream, you know.
I think the 70s, all that prog, the attention to detail that they put into the cover art was really, really inspiring.
I'm sure glad that we lately went back to the vinyl
exactly.
format.
Exactly, so it's like
because
a bigger piece of art.
Yeah, so I can make scenery.
It is very interesting that you picked up that Iron Maiden, you saw it, you knew that you were going to love it. Eddie was there, you know, so having like an emblem, a band, having a concept, having an identity crafted even before you guys started putting music together. How important was that for you? So that the band actually had a concept that could be a lyrical identity, a visual identity. A lot of bands only stumble into that much later into their career, but you guys started way before that.
Well, we did play a few covers there and there when we started, Judas Priest, Venom, Motorhead, Tank, mainly new wave of British heavy metal. But soon enough, we started writing music of our own, and the prog rock element was still there, the punk rock element was still there, but it was definitely heavy metal oriented, you know. It's hard to tell. Like when I asked Snake at school at college to if he wanted to sing with us. He said, I don't know how to sing, but I want to try. And I told him to learn The Ripper. And he, at the audition, he sang it like Johnny Rotten from Pistols, you know. And I thought it was amazing right away.
Yeah.
And so we sort of had a style immediately without knowing. We didn't know that obscure prog rock was not very popular outside of the province of Quebec, you know?
That is true, though, because it was massive in Quebec. We're going to hit that in a few... I have a question about that later, but...
Well, you know, like when Snake joined in January 83, we were looking for a name, and I mentioned Voiva. They're like, how do you spell it, of course? And then they were curious immediately, and I explained that it was a concept that I had created for the comic books I had in mind, but we ended up developing the concept all through the 80s over 5 albums.
It was a really
amazing experience. Yeah,
I think it's very, very, very cool. I like to play with concepts myself, but to have like a whole dimension, basically a whole world that you can just play with and imagine these characters. And
It's like it's really influenced by what was going on back then. Like
absolutely.
The Star Wars project, Reagan, Chernobyl accident, Challenger explosions. It's all in there.
Interesting.
But it's in the sci-fi folk tales type of thing. So I was lucky that the guys wanted to do that. And I sat down with Snake, and I'm really space oriented, and it's more street oriented, and we connected like the dots, like, and it turned into this trash metal stories, really. Yeah.
I think it's fucking awesome. Is there ever a moment that you came to a point where you hit like writer's block, and the band was more advanced? And your concept was not caught up, or the art aspect of it as well, where you are not sure how to visually represent this album, and it's sort of this obstacle that you had to get across.
The wall we hit at one point was after Nothing Face. when we were writing Angel Rat. And Snake didn't want to deal with the concept anymore.
Interesting.
And he wanted to talk about other things. And
interesting.
So it's really where we put it aside.
Okay.
And brought it back.
How hard was that for you to accept?
Oh, we had a meeting where I was asked to put less double kick drums and less conceptual stories, and I didn't take it really personally.
No,
I knew that MCA wanted the band to succeed because they were investing a lot of money. I went along for the ride, but when Angel Rat came out, everybody's eyes were turned on Seattle. You know, it's the same year as Smells Like Teen Spirit and all that. So it sort of went under the radar, and now people love it.
That's what happens. Yeah. We're switching gears. I'm moving to another beer. This is Le Fermentals. It's their Toxic Waltz. When I wrote Patrick, one of the main dudes behind Le Fermentals, he sings for Reanimator, to be a part of this project, he immediately wrote back Toxic Waltz. So he picked that name early on. This is a West Coast IPA. It's 6%, so it's going to be, there'll be a bit more bitter bite is my anticipation. Something that I get asked all the time, and I know you do too, and I would like to know your answer because you are a part of my answer. And I know, I imagine you know where I'm going with this, is the Quebec metal scene.
Oh, yeah.
Why and how, what is your answer? I have my answer. My answer I built from interviewing so many people and asking them this question, but I got the most concrete answer from Félix B. Desfossés, who wrote the Encyclopedia, the History of Metal in Quebec, and his answer was extremely clear and made a lot of sense to me. So I've sort of like stole it, but always credit him. What is your explanation as to why Quebec has so many prolific, amazing, extreme bands that succeeded globally?
Oh, man. I do, you know, I cross paths with tons of Quebec bands at festivals, and they have a great reputation for being really technical, and I don't know where it comes from. On my end, you know, I was lucky that bands like Anvil and Exciter made it to Jonquière. They usually play two sets a night for the whole week, and we'd be like on the front watching them the whole week.
That's so cool.
It was before Voivod.
Yeah.
But we played with Anvil at Wacken, and Lips remembers us sitting on the front.
He's super cool, man. Yeah,
cool guy. And Rush was a great influence for Voivod, but you know, like if it was not for our friends Wayne Archibald, I don't think we would have known about that new wave of British heavy metal on time, you know. And so because he was a tape trader, and we sort of opened the doors very early. Early, and soon enough, there was like Aggression, Damnation, and Dead Brain Cells, and a lot of. When we moved to Montreal in '85, it was mainly hardcore. Hardcore was really big, and where we rehearsed were bands like Scum, The Unruled, Fair Warning, Countdown Zero. So we got a lot of ideas from these guys through the walls. It's when the crossover happened, and metal dudes became more punk, and vice versa. But it took a bit of a while before bands from Quebec made it internationally. Probably in the early 90s is where I started to see shirts from bands from Quebec around the globe. Yeah.
We're very, very lucky that the scene that we had, that Prague scene, and this is a part of Felix's answer, is that a lot of musicians in your era went to the CJAPs to see all the prog bands play, because they would tour here and they were massive here. Yes, and Genesis. They would come and be way more successful in Quebec than most other places in the world.
Not only that, but when I was in high school and college, I got to see Quebec bands that were they were playing very good prog rock. Manège, Slush, Morse Code, Octobre. It was amazing. And so they had a. Not only did the people in Quebec love UK prog, but there was a huge Quebecois prog scene.
That's super sick.
Yeah, and very, very good musicians.
I think it's fucking awesome.
There is a label called Prog Quebec. I buy everything they put out. It's all reissues from way back. And
hell like, yeah. Yeah. Well, go check it out, people, if you want the old school Prog Quebec going on. I think that's fucking awesome. Well, thank you for doing, like, you know, starting a band and being successful and showing other Quebecois bands that it's possible. I think that a big part of the reason why a lot of us keep trying to do it early on is because we all saw you guys do it and you made it seem realistic.
Yes.
There's a lot of work that went into it, obviously.
It was a long roller coaster ride. And actually, at first, you know, I didn't know if it was possible. I remember seeing Anvil opening for Iron Maiden for the Number of the Beast tour at Coliseum in Quebec. And I remember thinking, not only I'll never be in a band big enough to be like Iron Maiden, I'll never be in a band big enough to be Anvil open, yeah. So and but we Warren Payne came out. I didn't dare quitting university until the first album came out, and then it had a very good impact. And that's really where I started to think. Okay, maybe
let's take a chance.
Maybe I can do it professionally. So I quit school and went for it. You know, but it was a lot of work. And at times, people were telling me that I was crazy to keep on keeping on. But now we have a great momentum, more popular than ever, so I was not crazy in the end.
No, you did the right thing. You did the right thing away. So this is something that I think about a lot and I analyze for myself in my career, this concept, this idea of making it. And you bringing up that Anvil thing and seeing, like, I'll never be there. Because in your mind at that time, I imagine, like, had you had played that show and be there, you had made it, let's say. There's always the fallacy of we're going to get signed and now we've made it.
Yeah, well.
But what is making it? I think it's a very personal, subjective thing. So for yourself, at what point did you ever imagine? Are you satisfied? Have you said you've made it, let's say?
Well, I learned to... It is really an illusion.
Yeah, I know.
Because
I'm still chasing it for some stupid reason.
Like when we did Nothing Face and we had the Astronomy Dominé...
Yeah.
On a lot of airplay,
yeah.
Did a tour with Faith No More and Soundgarden, then a tour with Rush, and I thought, yeah, we made it. And then Angerat came out, it didn't sell at all. And then we had to start over again, but it's really what I learned. You release an album, it doesn't sell, you write a new one, we try to make it better. And we went back to the indie style with Eric Forrest as a trio, and then with Jason Newsted jumping in the band in the early 2000s, the spotlight was on us again because he was also playing with Ozzy, and we were opening for Ozzy. So it's another period where I thought we made it, you know? But then, unfortunately, Piggy passed away and then took a break. It really took Heavy Montreal in 2008 before...
To bring you guys back.
Because for like 3 years, Jason, Snake, and I were on a mission to finish Infini and 14, the two albums we had started before Piggy's departure.
Jason loves you guys. I hosted the after parties for the live stream you did, and having him in the Zoom and everyone watching everyone's face whenever he would speak, I would see all the little squares on my side because I was hosting it. people were very stoked.
Yeah, he's really great. He's so hyper, that
he
guy.
He loves you so much.
He's always been like really supportive. We've met him in the 80s, and Piggy and I did a lot of recordings with him in the 90s under the name Tarrat, T-A-R-T-R-A-T, and it was never released, but it was a fun thing, and so a great friend. So when Snake came back in the early 2000s, it made sense for me to phone him, you know, to, and it was very strange, because I phoned him in mid-January of 2001, and to see if he could be to play bass on the album we wanted to write, and he told me, how did you know? I said, what? He said, I just left Metallica.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
It was just timing.
I had no idea.
No, of course not. Yeah.
And he got really excited and ended up joining the band. Great adventure.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Timing.
Yeah. Very
timing.
Strange.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I think that's fucking awesome. Something else is that you did, very cool, something that I'm very close to because I have young children. I work as an early childhood educator when I'm not doing death metal or drinking beers and asking people questions, having nice conversations with friends. You released a children's book, and I have it at my house, and I read it to my kids, and it's called Voivode le Thrash Metal Expliqué aux Enfants, and it was written by Pierre Giraud. So it's basically thrash metal explained to children. Talk to me about this project, and then watching like your iconic art being made for children, like not dumbed down, but let's say infantilized, let's say.
It's They sent me the first draft, you know, and I was blown away immediately. I liked the art of Pierre because I saw his art on the window of the vinyl store, the Knockout in Quebec City.
Really?
And he had drawn Voivode and a whole. So I love this art, and I was really happy with the project. And it's really funny because there are kids now into Voivode, and
It's awesome.
In Trois-Rivières, we saw a kid. He was about 3 or 2.5, and he had the book. And he was a bit taken aback because we were real people, and he thought we were cartoons.
I don't know, what Chewie's hair. I'm not sure it's human. We'll see.
It's a great thing, you know. I love it. It's really popular.
I think it's very special and very unique, and it's cool. It's an interesting, very cool thing, that the crossover of my two lives and you guys doing that. I think it's awesome.
It's new for us, you know, to sign the kids' books for kids.
Awesome.
Why not?
Something that I love to ask musicians that have succeeded and done basically everything. You've won a Juno. You've opened for Ozzy. You've toured all over the world. You've played all the major festivals. But as we started this off, you mentioned that you're writing a new album. Why do you keep going? What keeps you motivated?
I don't know why I dedicated my 40 years to Voivode. But the one thing is, I really, really love to travel.
Oh, okay.
I love it. I love to travel, play Voivode music in front of old friends, new friends, and now there are many generations of people coming to the show, so the clubs are packed.
Like,
you know?
The father, the son.
Yeah. And my favorite part is after the day, in every city, I do one drawing post online, and it's my impression of the day. It's my favorite part. And it's my next book, actually, is the road art.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. So I think every time we stop, I went back to reforming Voivode because I wanted to travel. And it was really hard during the pandemic. So we started with doing online shows.
Exactly.
Yeah, and playing classic albums.
Exactly.
And then we did some shows in the province of Quebec where everybody was 2 meters apart. We all had a mask on. And so and slowly but surely, we started to tour internationally last year. And
you were back home.
It's been really, really, really hectic, you know.
So basically, you're only in Vojvod for the free plane tickets.
The plane tickets are not free these days. It's actually the bad surprise we had post-pandemic the cost of the plane tickets, hotels, tour bus, crew.
Through the roof.
Yeah. It's hard it's really hard to make it. And
You got to buy merch, people.
Yeah, the merch is really saving us. Yeah, totally.
You got to buy merch, people. 2024 is going to be a big year. You're writing a new album. Maybe it'll come out then. I don't know how fast you guys work. But there is a book in the works, and there's a movie. Talk to me about both of these. Are they the history of Vojvod? What's going on here?
Yeah, the book is by Jeff Wagner, very versed in metal and progressive rock. And, it's called Always Moving, The Strange Multiverse of Vojvod. Yeah. And this should be out in the spring. Yeah. The movie is by Felipe Belalcazar, who did the Death by Metal movie. Felipe said a version could be available for the Summer Fest next year.
Nice.
So in the summer.
So basically people can go to Wacken hypothetically, go to Hellfest hypothetically, and there will be premieres of the movie.
I saw the last draft. It's really where I realized my career was really eventful. It was 40 years nonstop.
Sometimes you forget some stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. And right now they're doing animation with my art.
That's so cool.
So I think in the summer should be done. It was it was really slowed down by the pandemic as well, because Felipe could not travel for interviews, and so we wanted the book and the movie to come out this year for the 40th anniversary. But
sometimes you got to take a breath and just say 41 years is good too.
At least we had the Morgoth Tales album this year. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys don't stop. You're very impressive.
It was in March 19, 2020, I think, when everything stopped for everybody, and we check into our bank, and we had the recordings of Montreal Jazz Fest in 2019, and also Quebec City Summer Fest, and so we released vinyls.
Hell yeah!
We just did a bunch of releases, Ultraman cover, and so we never really stopped. And also we were forced to write an album while socially distancing. So we learned to sync up on the Logic Pro, and while we could not meet in the studio because of restrictions, we were still writing music.
But remotely.
And now we can do that because of that technique we learned. We can do that in the tour bus, in hotel rooms. So right now, everybody is at home, taking it easy for a short while, but we are like sharing files. I program a lot of drums for the demos, and so we keep moving, you know.
It's always very moving. Very very impressive, because a lot of bands go home and they're spent and they need to just take time and recharge. So good for you to keep working and pushing and bringing Vojvod to the higher and higher level.
We have a great chemistry, and we want to use it for as long as we can and as much as we can, and things are going great.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're going to switch beers. We're moving on to Jackal Hop. This is the fourth out of the five Pit Culture beers that just dropped. This is called Headbang. It's a New England pale ale that they hopped with Idaho 7 and Idaho Gem. I gotta say that all the hops that went into this beer were provided by Yakima Chief Hops. They sponsored this project. Shout out to Luc Beaulieu. Make some noise for Luc. It's like light and juicy. Cuts the bitterness from the last one right in half. At this point, let's talk about collabs. We're exactly at this point. I like making beer collabs. You have made beer collabs, but it's not your thing. If you could make a collab, what would be the perfect away collab? Something that really represents your identity, something that really represents you. If you could collab with any company in the world, what would it be?
Oh, I don't know. Like, what about here? Like, do they produce beer at Mutoid?
Oh, hell yes, they do.
Yeah. Maybe we can do a collab with Mutoid.
There you go, JM. You want a Voivod beer? It has been done. Alex is in. We're good. That'd be cool. But what, something even more like to yourself, like a, do you draw with crayons for real? Do you procreate? Where? How do you draw?
Oh, I have. At first, I did acrylic paintings, you know. But I was studying in science, and I had no idea. So I had to switch. Eventually, I had to switch to digital in the mid '80s. Yeah, with Commodore Amiga. First, I started with Apple II, and then I bought a Commodore Amiga, and I did the videos for the Dimension Atlas albums and Nothing Face cover. And now I replaced Photoshop with Procreate and an iPad digital pen. You know, but it would take me so long to do one painting. I switched to digital, and people were telling me it was not art because it was digital back then, you know. Now, of course,
everyone does that.
Yeah, these days I'm getting a lot of help from AI, and of course
nice.
People will tell me that
that is not art. Yeah, yeah,
but I feed the AI with my art.
It's, oh, that's interesting. That's really cool, actually.
It's really fascinating to see the interpretation of the AI of my art, especially if you type the word dystopian or something.
Yeah.
The vision of dystopia from an AI machine. At first, I was really jealous because it was amazing. You know? Yeah. So now I'm getting help from AI for videos and
that's
art.
Cool. Yeah. Good for you. Use the technology to your advantage.
I have to. People complain a lot, but for the last two or three videos, we've been using AI, and it would take me about 3,000 years to do that. You know, it's really insane. It's unbelievable. So it's there. While it's there, we're using it.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsheads? I just want to take a little moment about Cryptopsy's upcoming tours. That's right. I'm talking about the Scream of Perseverance tour and our headliner dates that coincide with that tour called As Summer Burns. The Scream of Perseverance tour is kicking off at the end of May and runs all the way until the end of June. We are supporting the mighty Death to All. We are going all over the United States, and we are hitting some of Canada. So excited to be honoring the legendary music of Death alongside amazing musicians that performed on these albums. Even more stoked to be doing some headliner dates in some cities that I've actually never played in. If you are planning to come to any of these shows, you should definitely grab your tickets by going to voxandhops.com/summer, and you will be able to grab all of your tickets there. That's voxandhops.com/summer. Do it, people. Come hang out with me. Enjoy life, metal, and craft beer in your hometown. Come to a show. We're going to have a great time. Now, enough about all of that. Let's get back to the episode.
At this point, I would open up the floor to a Q&A. Anyone have some questions that they would like to ask away? Step up to the mic, talk into the mic as usual. The first one up is Philippe from the Deux Vitesses, from the Whispers from the Void podcast.
Yeah, so my question is, like, you mentioned comic books. Have you ever thought about doing it for the Voivod universe?
Yes, I've been thinking about doing a comic. I've been asked to do a Voivod comic book many, many, many times, but I've been so busy being a rock and roll drummer on the road. It's really hard. It's a lot of work. During the pandemic, I did a comic book that I put online for sale online. It's called Tales from the Net. It's really like strange stories I gather over decades. I put it into a book. But a Voivod comic book, it's a great idea. But I'll have to think about retirement project type of scenario, because it's a lot of work.
That could be interesting, because like you mentioned comic books, you mentioned like sci-fi and all, and I was thinking about Coheed and Cambria, that that's what they do. Like, all their music is based on the comic book of the singer. So maybe you could do something like this for the Voivod universe. Like, maybe, like, you use an album that you did and just describe the story about it. That could be interesting.
Yeah, I'd love to do it eventually, to do the Voivod concept. At least there were 7 chapters. And the first 5 albums, and then Phobos in the 90s. And then there is a lost album that it was a final chapter. We were supposed to record it with Steve Albini, but we only demoed it. And so this was supposed to be the final chapter of the story. And so hopefully someday I can do something about it, but it's just that ever since we reformed in 2008, it just seems like we're touring more and more and more and more. So right now, I'm trying to wrap up the book about the road art that I do. Yeah, but I know that in February, things are going to start over again for us. You know, we have 2 shows in Joliette and Saint-Hyacinthe in February, but then right after, we go around the world again.
Yeah. That could be interesting. I would be the first to buy it if you do it.
It might be computer generated with an iPad and a digital
camera. That's good. That's good. I mean, like, personally, I'm not the biggest fan of AI, but I understand why people use it.
But I don't mean that I would use AI for it, but I would definitely do it on my iPad with a digital pen.
Yeah. That's great. That's
because,
great.
Again, you know, I love to draw ink on the road. I take the notepad from the hotel room and the pen from the hotel room to do like drawings. Sometimes it's blue. I love it, you know. So I will never stop doing that. But if I have to do something for Voiva that's going to end up in a layout, or I do it with Procreate and a digital pen, yeah. I wish I would be more versed into acrylic or oil painting.
Yeah.
That when I sent the Warren Paint cover to Metal Blade in '84, they were really nervous because the drummer was doing the painting. You know, but I had done one painting for my grandmother in high school, and that was it. It was a bold move,
wow.
But I really wanted to represent the music and the lyrics, you know. And also I had in mind the event where when I first came into the store and I saw the Iron Maiden cover. It's what I had in mind. It has to attract the eye of the kid, and it has to represent the music when you put the needle on, and the lyrics.
That's very good. Well, thank you for your time. You're the best drummer, honestly. I fucking love you.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
La mic est à toi.
So, yeah, I just, like, after touring with all these guys, like Rush and Ozzy and everything like that, was there a moment for you where you had a starstruck moment with someone you met? And how was it? Did you expect the person to react like they reacted to you? Or were they sweet? Were they an asshole or whatever?
Yeah, it's... I was lucky because when we toured with Rush, the boat management organized a meeting with the 2 bands. They were so nice, but we were pretty silent. We didn't say much. I didn't know what to tell the drummer, Neil Peart. You know, he was a hero of mine. But they were super nice, which is great. And then, once I was really starstruck. My favorite band is called Van der Graaf Generator, and it's a progressive rock band from UK. And 5 or 6 years ago, I was asked to go and pick up the Visionary Award of Prague Magazine in London, and he was there. And he was talking to me in French, and he was a super nice guy. And I was really starstruck that time as well, so that's the 2 time. I met the drummer from Magma, Christian Vander, another hero of mine, super nice guy. So far, so good. You know, it's great. And And we ended up opening for all of our heroes, Judas Priest, Dio, Motorhead, Iron Maiden. Everybody was nothing but polite to us. So I didn't... There's a band I really like called Lucifer's Friend. And they're an older band from UK, from the 70s. And we played Sweden Rock with them. They had the backstage right next door to us. So I saw their name and I went into the tent and I said, hey, I'm a big fan. And they looked at me very, very mean, you know. And I just backed like you know, like when Homer Simpson's backed in the and, but you know, it could have been a bad moment where they had a fight before, or I don't know, you know. So, but it's something that I won't do again because of that. I will never barge into a backstage.
That's an amazing one. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for being here. It's great. It's really cool to have you here. Thank you for doing this with all of us.
Thank you.
And you mentioned so many bands throughout the interview, and you accomplished so many things musically that I was just wondering, when you're not on tour, when you're just at home, or when you're driving, or just chilling, what's on your playlist? What you are listening to? And is there any band that you still listen to that still gives you the chills? It still makes you feel that energy, like when you first listened to them?
Oh, yes. I mean, I'm very old school. So it's quite often, if I buy a new album, it will be the new album from Heroes of Mine. And some of these heroes still release amazing music, like Judas Priest or Magma, Van der Graaf, you know, PIL, and you know. So I usually like buy the new album from older bands, but while touring, sometimes my mind will be blown by a band that I will see on stage. And the one that really blew me away the last couple of years was Gojira. Every time I see them, I'm totally blown away. Yeah. So I only basically have access to newer music while playing festivals, which is great. You know, I make sure to go from one stage to the other and watch what's going on. You know. Yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
Hell yes. Thank you all for being here. We're gonna wrap this up. One last beer to present. This is Lira Needs Tries. This beer, it's called Breakdown. I'm surprised it took this long in the Pit Culture project for someone to pick that name, but I'm happy they did. This is a West Coast IPA, 6.2%. Cheers, everyone. See, different, more smooth, more almost crisp at the end. Very, very cool. Classic Vox and Hops wrap-up question. It probably doesn't happen to you very often because you don't enjoy craft beer the way I do. But every once in a while, especially in Belgium, if you're playing a show and you're halfway through the set and you're like, what the hell did they give me? And you look down, it might happen to you. And hypothetically, Snake might be better at answering this question. What is your hangover cure?
Oh, I think Putin. I think.
Hell fucking yes. Everyone here, 5 anniversary party at Mutaid. Make some fucking noise for Away from Voivod. Thank you so much for all being here. What a way to celebrate 5 years. I appreciate you all. Thank you so fucking much. Cheers. Thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, this was an awesome, awesome conversation. What a night. The 5-year anniversary party at Mutaid for Vox and Hops. What a pleasure. Sadly, Snake from Voivod was unable to be with us. He had car troubles and was just physically incapable of coming to the party, sadly. I will
hang out with Snake one day. He is one of those guests that I've always wanted to have, such as Away. What a pleasure it was to hang out with Away. He was just so generous with his time, with the way that he answered his questions. He is such an influential artist, both drummer and as a visual artist. What a wonderful human. Just super interesting the way that he approaches creating stuff, always thinking from a different perspective, always trying to do something a little bit different. I find that truly inspiring, and I cannot wait to see that brand new book that he's putting together of all of his illustrations that he's been drawing on the road. I think that's super cool. Massive thanks to Away and the rest of the Voivod camp for just being awesome and being a part of this awesome thing that I've done for the past 5 years called Vox and Hops. Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week that contains all of the details of everything that has happened recently in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You get to see which episodes I dropped recently. You will get to see which episodes I have coming up. You will get to hear about any projects I have in the works before I announce them to the public. You will also get to find out what's going on in the world of Cryptopsy and with As Gamora Burns dropping just last month. We have a lot of stuff going on, so if you want to be up to date in that, sign up to the mailing list. The mailing list also includes all the details of all the albums that the Vox and Hops album review crew have reviewed recently, and you will get to see which albums Jerry Monk, Vox and Hops' metal architect, has added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist. There's always a lot of stuff going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, so please do me a favor and sign up to the mailing list, because I hate when you miss a single thing. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a killer rest of the week. I will be back next week on Tuesday with another episode, a very cool episode, which I recorded on the Carnival of Death tour when we swung through Roseville. It is a crossover episode with the Cali Death Podcast. That's right. Very cool metal podcast that I like very, very much. Get ready, everyone. That's coming up next week. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week, I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.